Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Piano Jazz. I'm sitting in for Marion McPartland today, and my guest is singer-pianist Lawston Harris. His style is contemporary and stylish, while being joyful and soulful at the same time, which makes him an immensely satisfying musician. His music is a combination of humanity and genius. Lawston, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's absolutely wonderful to be here with you to explore this wonderful world of music.
Yeah, this is the first time we've actually gotten to work together. It's always either me checking you out or you've come in by the Carlisle, and we never really get to collaborate, so this is going to be fun.
Well, yes, indeed. I so enjoy listening to you, and I'm dazzled by what you do in the club, and I find that every night is different. When I work in clubs, I find that there's a different energy. Do you find that that affects the way that you play?
Absolutely. There's nights when you could hear a pin drop, and it's almost as if we're in a concert hall. And then there's other nights where it's rowdy. You'll get a big party that's coming in from the Whitney Museum or some event, and we kind of have to deal with the noise level. But my first piano teacher, the great Ellis Marsalis, he said there's a way to play that makes people listen. So we keep the music joyful. We keep people tapping, tapping their feet, and it's a joy just to be able to share the gift with all those that pop in. We just brighten their day for a little minute.
You sure brighten mine, my days and my nights. For people who don't know, Lawston plays regularly, seasonally, we should say, at the Bemelman's Bar in the Carlisle Hotel. And during the times that you're not there, you're off concertizing and recording and doing many other things.
Yeah, it's been 7 years at Bemelman's. It's a blessing. So
yeah, 7 years, good luck.
Yeah, I'd say. There you go.
Some nights I go in there and you are so on fire, and I wonder how many extra choruses you play of something when you're going.
you kind of get into that zone where you stop counting, you stop thinking about all the rules you learned, you just go out the window. Because the ideas keep flowing. And because my trio is so tight, Chris Berger's on bass, Marcus Parsley on the trumpet, and Verona Fief on guitar Tuesdays and Wednesdays. But we have such a cohesiveness that it's a trust thing. So if one of us goes off on a tangent or has something a little more to say on one night than another night, we trust each other enough to support that, and we know where we're going with it, so it's a joy. Every night's different.
How did you discover standards?
Francis Albert Sinatra.
Oh yeah.
I have to be perfectly honest. That's when I first discovered the words
right.
to standards. I was playing songs, T for Two, and I had a jazz trio, just piano, bass, drums, before I was singing. So I was playing standards, listening to Ahmad Jamal, Errol Garner, and the great piano players, Oscar Peterson, Earl Father Hines. And so I'd have to say, I'd have to say when I was about 21 years old, I got serious about transcribing and learning, learning these melodies. And then I discovered that after copying a melody from another artist, you still don't know the actual melody because they left parts out or they made mistakes. So we copy mistakes, and I really found that you got to go back to the drawing board and get the melody right and
to the ink.
To the ink. And I don't know. I'm still learning that.
Well, you're doing phenomenally, I must say.
Thank you.
If you say you're learning, I can't imagine what you have left to learn.
Ooh, always.
Early influences, piano influence. You mentioned Garner. You mentioned Ahmad Jamal. Who else?
Let's see. Well, yeah, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, different players for different reasons. Art Tatum. So many different genres. I mean, and you're doing on a jazz gig. It's like, guys show up and try to cover 60 years of music in one night, in three sets. So I've come to find, from my style, a happy blend between Errol Garner, Ahmad Jamal, and a little bit of Oscar Peterson here and there. But that's just kind of where my hands fall when I touch the instrument.
Would you play something?
Yeah, I would like to play a tune by Fats Waller.
One of the great, great, amazing pianists as well as great writers.
And this is called the Jitterbug Waltz. Every time I hear the song, I think of Ellis Marsalis, who I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for him, because I was a percussion major at Virginia Commonwealth University. And he said, you don't need to be playing the drums, you need to be playing the piano. He kind of heard me goofing off one day. And so that changed my life, and I always think of him when I think of this song, Jitterbug Waltz.
That was delicious, is what that was.
Thank you.
Did you first learn that from Fats Waller's original recording? Or how did you come to the Jitterbug Waltz? Because that's a thing that's been reinterpreted through the years. And, of course, Fats Waller was not only a great writer, but a fantastic pianist.
Yes, I first learned this melody by transcribing. Ellis Marsalis recorded it on one of his trio CDs, so I went back and recently I downloaded the Fats Waller recording. Not to a surprise, but it was exactly the way it was meant to be played. So I was thinking, well, if I copy Ellis's version, maybe I'm putting in nuances that he would. Yeah, but yes. No, Fats. When I listened to Fats Waller, Ellis was copying Fats Waller. That's how I came to know that song. I just always think of him, Ellis, when I hear it, because he had such an impact on my life. When I was a student at Virginia Commonwealth.
Well, he's the one who converted you from a drumming major to a piano major?
Yes, yeah. It's well, a wild
now,
story.
But. Yeah, now how old were you when you started to study music as a drummer, and then at what age did you switch to piano?
Age 9, started with percussion, and I switched to piano at 21.
21?
Yes.
That's late in the game, but obviously that's what you were meant to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah, he heard something that was just, he says, you're just at home, naturally. And he stayed after class and helped me to develop the gift.
Now, had you played, you must have played at some point, you must have sat down at the piano before you were 21 to play it in some capacity.
Just to doodle. I was just goofing off on the piano throughout high school, but never, I couldn't tell you what chords or voicings or harmony. I didn't know anything. I was just banging on the instrument. But he heard something explained to me 2-5-1 chord progression. I didn't even know what a 2-5-1 meant. You know, so I had something there that was natural. And I think Ellis said, let's develop that because it's natural. So he was right.
Well, how did you feel when he said, this is what you should be doing? Was your first reaction, what is he talking about? I'm a drummer. Or when did it become clear to you that this is what
it was a blessing in disguise. I was there as a percussion major, so I auditioned for these jazz bands and didn't get into any of them. So I went to Ellis's office. I said, Mr. Marcellus, you know, Lawson Harris, hi, yeah, I know you're, I don't see my name on the roster. You know, after you audition, they post jazz band, A band, B band, combo band, C, D, E, F, G, H. Mm. So I'm not on there. He goes,
None of them.
And so Ellis looks, he goes, that's because you can't play.
Oh.
No, but it's funny now. At the time, I was like, oh, wow. But it was a tool and a device that really kind of woke me up. What he was trying to say was that I didn't know the history and understand. I didn't go back to the beginning with percussion, and I was listening to contemporary fusion and rock drummers and couldn't tell you who Philly Joe Jones or Art Blakey was. And that his point was you got to go back and dig the history of this music. And just by chance, I was goofing off in his office. He heard me playing. And he said, there's just a natural thing on the piano. And I thought he was crazy because I'd spent my whole life, everybody else seemed to think that I was halfway decent as a percussionist. But I'm thankful for Mr. Marcellus clarifying that.
Interesting. Yet, there is so much of the percussive influence in your playing.
Yes, yeah.
And that's a tremendous advantage because it gives you a unique sound.
Well, it's a percussion instrument, I mean, technically speaking, but I still have it inside of me. I guess I just use it in different ways now. So
yeah, you manifest it differently. Mm. Now, playing and singing, you do a good deal of that now, and that's something that you've evolved.
Yeah, after I first heard Nat King Cole, and I it blew my mind. I was on tour with Wynton Marsalis, and all the time, you know, he would talk about just the history of Jelly Roll Morton, and, you know, Thelonious Monk going back. So after I got off the tour, I went back once again deeper, came up through this jazz piano lineage, you know, came up to Earl Father Hines and so forth, and I get to Nat Cole, who kind of patterned his style a bit after Earl Hines. I just heard him singing. I said, you know, I've been playing a lot of these songs instrumentally, but people would like to hear the words, or I'd like to know the words. I'd like to give a shot at this, and that's kind of where I'm at. I want to kind of keep this music alive, and I think the words and the melodies need to be heard.
Well, that you're doing beautifully. Would you do a number that was sung and played by Nat Cole?
I would love to do that. This is one by the great Bobby Troup, Route 66.
If you ever plan to motor west, take the highway, that's my way, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. Well, it winds from Chicago to L.A. than 2,000 miles all the way. And get your kicks on Boot 66. You go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo and Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. If you get hip to this timely tip, once you make the California trip, get your kicks on Route 66. Chicago to L.A., more than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. You go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo and Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. If you get hip to this timely tip, won't you make the California trip? Get your kicks on Route 66. Get your kicks on Route 66. Get your kicks on Route 66.
Thank you very much. Lawston, you just played and sang beautifully that
thank you.
Bobby Troup standard. I got to meet Bobby Troup in L.A.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And he was such a tongue-in-cheek kind of guy, wrote lots and lots of songs, great pianist, great composer, and a great lyricist.
Yes, yeah.
Well, there's more music in a minute with me, Michael Feinstein, and my guest, Lawston Harris. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. You're listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and friends. How often do you write music? Is that a muse that you feel is untapped?
The past couple, 2 or 3 years, I haven't been. I've been focusing more on arrangements of standards. There was a time when I was writing quite a bit and interjecting some of the originals into my act, and every now and then someone would say, "What is that song from?" I have my partner Leonard Greenberg, who writes the lyrics, and then I come up with the music and the melodies. And it's been a while since I've gotten back to the composing, and I need to do that.
Do you feel there's more to say in songwriting? I mean, sometimes I'll do an interview and I'll say, you know, if there was never another song written, we would have enough. And I say that as a songwriter. I mean, I enjoy writing songs, but sometimes I feel like in some ways there is an expression for everything.
And as you know, the history of the Great American Songbook, just to get inside of it and to learn melodies the way they're supposed to be played and sang. And I think, you know, once you get familiar with that, then you can take that to composition. At least you have, you know, I mean, I, tend to gravitate towards some composers more than it, like Sammy Kahn, Jimmy Van Heusen, that team, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
They kind of have similar devices, and I just think we have a lot of big shoulders to stand on, you know. They paved the way, so we're just keeping it alive. I'm not sure if there's much more to say. They said a lot.
Yeah, it's all a lineage, isn't it?
Oh, it's great, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes a standard, a song that is known in one way becomes a jazz standard and is interpreted differently. And sometimes those changes in interpretations become the way the song is known.
Mm.
And
very true.
Certain melodies are changed forever, like Lover Man. The actual melody of that is, I don't know why I'm feeling so bad. But when Billie Holiday sang, I don't know why I'm feeling so bad, I've never heard anybody not do it the way Billie Holiday did
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
So certain things have become etched in that way. And there's a number that I'm going to do called I Can't Get Started that was introduced by Bob Hope on Broadway. It was a Broadway tune. It was not a hit. Mm. Then a couple years later, Bunny Berrigan made a record of it, and it became a hit several years after thing was written. And it always bothered Ira Gershwin, who wrote the lyrics, that Bunny Berrigan changed the lyrics, and everybody sang the lyric the way Bunny Berrigan recorded it, and it wasn't the way Ira wrote it, and it had a double negative. Still, I can't not get started with you. And Ira said, people are going to think that I know how to write a lyric, oh, for God's sake. And this is when he was 80 years old. He was still fretting over something that had happened, you know, 40 years earlier. So songs change.
Well, I remember you saying they really, they labored over those, every word, every lyric. I think once we were talking about it was a foggy day. I viewed the morning with much alarm. That much is not in there.
It's not in there. Sinatra put it in there. And
it stuck. I still do it by accident.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to. It's hard not to sing it that way because I view the morning with alarm. Well, that pause was in the original, but most people don't want to do it anymore.
Wow.
Well, I'd like to do this one
with
the way that I originally wrote the lyric.
Okay.
I'm a glum one. It's explainable I met someone. Unattainable, life's a bore. The world is my oyster, no more. All the papers where I led the news with my capers. Now we'll spread the news. Superman turns out to be Flash in the pan. I've flown around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I have charted, but can't get started with you. Around the golf course I'm under par, and all the movies want me to star. I've got a house, a show place, but I get no place with you. You're so supreme. Lyrics I write of your scheme, just at the side of your dream. Both day and night of you. But what good does it do? The market trembles when I sell short. In England I'm presented at court, but you've got me downhearted, 'cause I can't get started with you. The Himalaya mountains I climb, I'm written up in fortune and time. The Astrobuilts I visit, but say, what is it with you?
always best regards and much love from Mr. Dewey, you know the Gov. I'm asked to every state ball, still I'm behind the eight ball with you. Oh, tell me why am I no kick to you? I who'd always stick to you fly through thin and thick to you. Tell me why I'm taboo. Good grief, I'm not exactly a clod. When Elvis Presley bows, I just nod. The Siamese twins I've parted, still I can't get started with you. Get started with you.
Now, there's an example of a lyric that Ira Gershwin rewrote through the years. He put in that reference to Elvis Presley in the 50s. So that was an amalgam of different versions that he wrote. But that was Ira's lyric and music by Vernon Duke.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Do you pay much attention to the composers? Like, do you know the composers of the songs you do? Because some people don't care.
I don't give enough attention. I've most of what I've learned actually came from asking you questions. I was doing like songs like How About You. For 3 or 4 years, I didn't know Burton Lane. I didn't know who wrote it. I was just doing the tune. I heard it, and someone sang it. I said, it's a great song. So I've always gravitated towards the performer, whether it's Sinatra or Nat Cole or Tony Bennett. And that's how I learned the standards before I understood what was going on with the ink, like you said. But the composers, that's a whole nother world. But they do deserve the respect of at least getting the melody right and the words.
Yeah. Well, George Gershwin was very close with a lady named Kay Swift, and she was a songwriter who wrote Can't We Be Friends and Can This Be Love. And one day she complained to George Gershwin about Ruth Etting, who was singing one of her songs on Broadway. She said, after she sang the first chorus, she just went so far afield with the melody that it was unrecognizable. And Kay was complaining to George. She said, I don't even recognize my song after she sings the first chorus. And George Gershwin said, just be grateful she sings it straight the first time. So those are the words of Gershwin.
Wow.
Well, there's more to come with Lawston Harris. And you can find artist information, set lists, and much more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Michael Feinstein, sitting in for Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Lawston, I know one of your great influences, Errol Garner, and you're going to do a song that he wrote, but the song is so ubiquitous. How do you approach a song that has been done so often by so many?
Great question. It depends on my mood and what I want to try to convey. I think I chose Misty just as a tip of a hat to Errol Garner and just the influence he's had on my piano playing and still does.
Do you sit on a on a phone book when you're
playing? No,
no.
That's cool. But I do sit high up. I like to be on top of the on top of the keys. It's he has quite a unique style.
Please avail us. Thank you. Thank you, Lawson. That was wonderful. I love the dissonances that you put in there. It's so surprising and so
thank
so
you.
Much fun.
Yeah, it's he just had a bounce, you know. And the first time I heard Errol Style, that percussive, that left hand is just constantly, you know. I was like,
That's it.
Let me check this out. So that was just a tribute, a tip of the hat to him, you know.
It's delightful, just delightful.
Thanks, yeah.
I'd love to do something with you vocally if we could collaborate on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, let's do that.
There's a Jerome Kern song with lyrics by Johnny Mercer that is a fave, I think, of both of ours. And it's from a movie called You Were Never Lovelier. Hmm. And it's a classic. It's called I'm Old Fashioned.
Let's do it.
I love the moonlight, I love the old-fashioned things, the sound of rain upon my windowpane, the starry song that April sings. This year's fancies are passing fancies, but sighing sighs holding hands, these my heart understands. I am old-fashioned, but I don't mind it. That's how I want to be, as long as you agree to stay old-fashioned with me. Fancies, but sighing sighs holding hands, these my heart understands. I'm old-fashioned, but I don't mind it. That's how I want to be, as long as you agree to stay old-fashioned.
Thank you, Lawson. It's such an interesting experience for me singing with your accompaniment because it made me phrase the song differently. It was a completely different approach, and I love that. I love the collaborative experience in that way.
Yes, we should do that more often. If it's,
Why don't we do this more often, just like we're doing tonight? Everything is a song. Margaret Whiting always would launch into a song for anything you said. It became a very musical conversation. So that was that we did. I'm Old Fashioned by Johnny Mercer and Jerome Kern. Well, as you can tell, I'm having a great time with Lawson Harris, and we'll have more music in just a minute. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends.
Thank you.
Lawson, have you ever paid much attention to background scores in movies, film music scores, the composers of those scores?
One that comes to mind is the theme from Laura. But most of the time, I'm not really sure who's behind the magic of those scores.
It's interesting to me because there's an entire body of work that is so extraordinary and not very well known to the public, except in some cases where tunes become hits or jazz standards, like in the case of On Green Dolphin Street. Uh-huh. Did you know that was a movie theme?
Yes, yeah.
And it was written by Bronislaw Kaper, who had a number of song hits, but they all came out of his film scoring work.
Hmm.
And it's something that has always intrigued me, because as a kid I would listen to these film scores and I would try and remember them, I would try and preserve them in some way.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned Laura. Well, that's probably the most famous piece of music to come out of a background score for a film. And I was very good friends with David Raxon, mm-hmm. who composed Laura. And he died a few years ago at the age of 94. And he wrote a number of other themes that I was able to learn courtesy of him. And I'd like to play actually a combination of two of them.
Mm.
This first one is a theme for an MGM movie called The Bad and the Beautiful. It starred Kirk Douglas. And then the thing I've coupled it with is 2 Weeks in Another Town, which was a movie made approximately 10 years later that was considered the sequel to Bad and the Beautiful. So two themes by David Raxon.
Wonderful. Beautiful. I have to check out the the film what was that?
First was Bad and the Beautiful. Right? It's a sort of film noir thing directed by Vincent Minnelli. Quite a good movie. Lana Turner, Kirk Douglas, and 2 Weeks in Another Town, which was another gorgeous, gorgeous piece. Yeah, that's a whole world. Waiting to be rediscovered. Well, it's interesting that earlier when you were talking about favorite songwriters, the first songwriter you mentioned was a lyricist. You mentioned Sammy Kahn, and I was quite intrigued by that you didn't mention a composer first, but you mentioned a lyricist.
Right. Well, I don't know what it is about Sammy Kahn.
It speaks to you.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. Can you explain that?
Well, he was one of the great writers of what I call special material, in that he was able to tailor his songs for the performer, and he wrote 88 songs that were recorded by Frank Sinatra.
Right.
And he wrote those songs thinking of Frank Sinatra as he created them. So he was able to express a sort of vernacular and a kind of a slang and a kind of casual quality in his lyrics. That's very much the way I think people speak in life.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's what attracts you to him.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, the Tender Trap and all that. I mean, it does go on and on, but so he was writing with Frank in mind.
Absolutely.
Okay.
He once said that he put more words in Frank Sinatra's mouth than Frank put in his own.
Mm.
Well, would you do one of his earlier song hits that he wrote with Julie Stein?
I would love to do that. This particular song, The Things We Did Last Summer, and I'm going to take liberties with the harmony and the voicings, but the melody and the lyric will speak for themselves. Rides we would take, the moonlight on the lake, the way we danced and hummed our favorite song, the things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long, the midway and the fun, the Cupid dolls we won, the bell I rang to prove that I was strong, the things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long, the early that rented tandem bike, the lunches we used to pack. We never could explain that sudden summer rain, the looks we got when we got back. The leaves begin to fade like promises we made. How could a love that seems so right go wrong? The things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long.
that rented tandem bike, the lunches we used to pack. We never could explain that sudden summer rain, the looks we got when we got back. The leaves begin to fade like promises we made. How could a love that seems so right go wrong? The things we did last summer I'll remember all winter long.
That was a very cinematic rendition of that song.
Well, yeah, I'm actually thinking about orchestral parts while I'm playing, you know, the strings and what other instrumentation could be applied. But that's a very cool observation, cinematic. I like that.
It's wonderful the way you made the song a little darker harmonically, because it gives it a kind of weight that's in the lyric that I think you enhanced.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for sharing this time with us. It really is wonderful to not only hear you, but to be able to converse with you, even though I've known you for a while. We've talked about things that we've never discussed, and it's been illuminating for me.
Yeah.
And it's just given me all the more respect for what you do. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Well, let's finish with a piano duo, which I'm very excited about. And it's a song by Jerome Kern and Dorothy Fields. How often do you hear the lyrics when you play something, when you know the lyrics? Do you hear the lyrics in your head when you're doing these solos?
Yeah, it's hard not to. I think keeping the melody and keeping the lyric in your head, it's always good. I interject kind of quotes from other songs into my solo that kind of are relevant. It's almost like there's 10 conversations going on in my head at once, as you know.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because with the way you look tonight, this lyric by Dorothy Fields, she said it was her favorite lyric of all the lyrics that she ever wrote. And no matter how often I hear it instrumentally, it's impossible for me not to hear that lyric in my brain.
Yeah.
So I'll be silently hearing it as we do it now.
Yeah, let's.
The Way You Look Tonight, Jerome Kern, Dorothy Fields. That was a blast, Lawson. Thank you very much.
That was a lot of fun.